So let's move now to the question of Yerusha of the Bechor. Now there's a lot of questions within Yerusha of the Bechor. I'm going to start with the first question, which is, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about the nature of the mitzvah of Yerusha in general. Well, now let's move to Bechor. Is it the same or is it different? So, one of the things that we had noted when we read the Psukim about Yerusha was that there seems to have been a lack of any proactive imperative statement. Right? Right? It never said, you shall do this. It's, if there is an Adon, so then it goes to the daughter. And therefore, we saw already weird formulations in the Rambam, and we saw possible implications about the halakha that Yerusha is not a classic mitzvah in that sense. However, that's not exactly the case when we move to Parshat Ki Teitzeh and talk about Bechor. So let's read the Psukim and tell me what your impressions are of these Psukim. So, Ki tihyena li'ish shtei nashim, ha'achat ahuva v'achat snua, v'yaldu lo vanim ha'ahuva v'achat snua, v'haya ben ha'bechor la'snia. So first Pasuk is entirely descriptive. If a man has two wives, one who is beloved, one who is hated, and they both bear him children, and the firstborn is of the hated. V'haya b'yom hanchilot banav et asher yeh lo, lo yuchal v'akeret ben ahuva al p'nei ben asnua b'chor. And if on the day when he bequeaths to his children that which he has, he cannot, lo yuchal l'vaker, he cannot b'chorify. Right? B'chorify? I don't know. Right? So it's either recognized, right? Something like from the Shoresh of Yakir, which definitely becomes central in the Sugyot, and the next Pasuk. But Livvakir also is like to make the Bechor. Et ben ha'oval p'nei... What? No, that's the Kuf. Et ben ha'oval p'nei v'nesnua Bechor. Ki et ha'bechor ben ha'snua Yakir latet lo pishnayim b'chol asher yimatzei lo. Ki hu reishito no lo mishpat ha'bechora. But the Bechor, the son of the hated wife, he shall recognize to give him double in all that is found to him, for he is the first of his strength, to him is the laws of the firstborn. Okay? So what are your impressions? What would you say? What exactly, it's clear that the firstborn gets double portion, but what would you say? What's going on in the Psukim? Is there a mitzvah? What exactly? How would you read these Psukim?
The Torah is providing the easy setup for a called Gomer. So where it's explaining, it's trying to explain the laws of before.
Yeah.
So in this case where you think, oh, this would seem like the most obvious where you would be able to inherit.
Okay, so let's unpack what Ravi's saying. What Ravi is saying is that... So...
I didn't make it in A4 to C.
You didn't pronounce that correctly.
What? Are you saying I made a fast
Okay.
Yes, okay. So let's unpack what Ravi's saying. Ravi looks at the Psukim and he says, if I understand Ravi correctly, Ravi's saying, well, don't pay too much attention to what the Psukim are saying in terms of the language. The whole point of the Psukim is to tell you that I'm going to set up for you an extreme situation in which you would want to not give the Bechor his rights. And in that case, I have to go out of my way to tell you, you can't do that. You have to give the rights to the Bechor. It doesn't matter what you think, doesn't matter what you want. And therefore, since we say that in that context, you know that that's true always. Okay? That's basically what Rami said. But before, one second, Ezra, let's tease out what Rami said. According to what Rami said, are the words here that include imperatives and prohibitions, do you take those seriously? Meaning, what do you think they're accomplishing here? Don't let Ezra scare you here, right?
It just seems like It's fucking like niche case.
It is a niche case, and therefore what?
But I mean, it's talking about it seems to. It does seem to be in the case where you would assume that you would.
Correct, and therefore what? But what does that tell me about the nature of the mitzvah b'chor? Let's say you're right, I want you to take the next step. Let's say you're right. Let's say that the whole point of this pasuk is to tell me that in this niche case where you might have thought that this is not the case, that you give the yerusha to the son, the firstborn son, you still do, dot, dot, dot. Therefore, what do we learn about the nature of the mitzvah b'chor, according to you?
You
were obligated to... It's not what I asked you. I didn't ask you if you're obligated. We know that the upshot of this is that you have to recognize the son of the hated wife of the Bechor. That's not what I'm asking you. What is the nature of what is the nature of that obligation? Don't change your mind on me now. I want you to spell out your position to the end.
It is a... Okay, so I'm not sure what language you want me to use. It is this obligation upon the...
What nature of obligation? Remember, we talked about this in Yerusha, right? We talked about it. There are different types of obligations, right? There are mitzvot in the classic sense, the avedot in the classic sense. And then there are cases where the Torah gives you a procedure, and the mitzvah is really to follow the rules, and there's a rubric of rules. They're not separate mitzvot and avedot. What is it? What is the obligations that the father has for us before?
To make sure he has his inheritance.
Is it a mitzvah? Is it the same mitzvah as Yerusha? Is it a separate mitzvah?
Yeah,
what do you think?
Okay, so just because I do have a different idea of how Yerusha runs, but before I would say that it is unlike Yerusha in it, so that it's a mitzvah in its own right.
Oh, okay. See, Rami now says it's his own mitzvah, but you really could have gone and said no, right? You could have taken your analysis ad hasof, which was to say, look, ignore all the very strong language here of don't recognize the non-firstborn as the firstborn. Do recognize the firstborn as the firstborn. You could have read that, right? And I thought where you were going, but apparently wasn't, was that, look, all that language there is just to make sure that you don't do, in this extreme case, what everyone understands is wrong in a normal case. But if you take that formulation, you could just end up with the conclusion that really Bechor is a subset of the mitzvah of Yerusha. Whatever Yerusha is in general, right, which Rami says is not really a mitzvah, it's a set of procedures, so you're going in that direction, right? Meaning you could have just said, look, Yerusha in general is a rule, right, a set of rules to follow a certain set of procedures. It's not really a mitzvah, it's not a vera in the classic sense as we've talked about. And therefore, Bechor is the same thing. Bechor is one of those laws in this procedure. Do these psukim have so much charged language of positives and negatives? What? It's because it's the case where you wouldn't want to do it. So the Torah is just doing this for emphasis. But fundamentally, once the Torah says that following the rules of Bechor is just part of the rules of Yerusha, as you were saying that. So who said that? Who reads the psukim seemingly the way that Rami just read them?
The Rambam,
right? Meaning, the way Rami is reading the Pesukim seems to be a very plausible way of the way the Rambam read the Pesukim, right? Because the Rambam says in number 2, V'amitzvah reish memchet, hi ha-Torah she'enu b'dinei nechalot. The 248th positive mitzvah is to do Yerusha, right? Amru yitaleh, one second, Eli. Ish ki amud ha-benin lo. U'michlal din ze belo safek. And there is no doubt, you always have to be worried when someone says there's no doubt. There is no doubt that part of this is the Yor Bechor Yorish B'Shnayim. The Yorish gets double. The Bechor gets double. V'zeh Mishpan Mishnei Yorishim. That's a law under the subset of the laws of heirs. Right?
Yeah.
Meaning what Rami is doing is essentially, I think, what the Rambam did. Which the Rambam looked at and said, don't get caught up in all this strong language. Don't take it too seriously. The point is that everybody understands that the firstborn gets double. It's like Darko Sholom, right? Don't you know that that's the entire theme of all of Sefer Bereishit, which is that the firstborn is always supposed to be the main heir and never is, but it's presented as a frustration of the natural order, so God knows how you're supposed to read Bereishit, right? But the theme of Bereishit is that there is a firstborn who should, by right, get the double portion and never does, right? Ever, 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 ever. right? But it's still the given. It's the given that we have to frustrate, right? In one case, we frustrate it because we kick out the firstborn and say, you're not really the son of a real wife, right? I.e. Ishmael. In another case, we have a formal sale in which the firstbornhood is bought by the non-firstborn, right? Right? For some soup, and then it's stolen yet a second time, right? So we get this done. But we have, like, the active theme of Bereishit is obviously firstborns inherit, except when they don't, which is never, but that's fine, right? Fine. But my point is that I think that the Rambam read the Pesukim the way Rami did, which is, no, Bechorot is a subset in the midst of Yerusha. It's just a subset of the midst of Yerusha. All this language is to tell you that even when you don't like it, deal. Right? Don't take away someone's rights that are natural, inherent, the firstborn. That's just the way the world works. You might want to change it, but too bad. Don't tell me that we did change it. Okay, fine. Yeah, Ellie. Ellie is very angry at this. Yeah.
I don't think this is anything like Yerusha, because this, at least in like I've said before,
but look at this. So Ellie looks at it and says, Mapitam, let's take the words in the Pesukim as they appear. Right? As they appear. The Pesukim by Yerusha have no charged language, no normative language whatsoever. It is a descriptive language, right? But these Pesukim have very charged mitzvah-like language. Namely, so he picked up on one of them, which is, Lo yuchal levaker, Ed, Ben, right, etc. You cannot grant firstbornhood to the beloved son in the place of the hated son. So Eli says, aha! Whatever it is, in addition to Yerusha, there is a mitzvah, lo ta'aseh, to protect the right of the firstborn. Now, theoretically, you could have had a much narrower read, which was, and we're going to see this, because this was Yaakov's question, so I think we'll definitely have to do this again, right, which is, you could have a narrower read. Right, Eli says that the read is, don't deny the Bechor his firstborn right. But there's a narrower read, which is, very good. Don't deny the firstborn rights because you hate his mother or something like that. I mean, don't unjustly deny the firstborn his rights, but theoretically that would leave you open to the possibility that you could do that in a case where it's deserved, which turns out to be a machloket in the Gemara itself, which is, are you allowed to disinherit children because they deserve to be disinherited rather than... So we're going to bracket that question for a minute. Very good. So that's part of the sugya, the machlok, right? That's part of the sugya. But we're not going to do that today, but maybe we'll, but we will, I hope we have time to actually do that sugya. But yes, Ellie picks up on the fact that there does seem to be an actual prohibition here. Though, in theory, it could either be don't deny the firstborn his rights, or it could be don't deny a firstborn his rights for the wrong reasons. Right? Yes, Ellie. Very good. And then Ezra says, what does lo yuchal mean? Lo yuchal means, it's, you know, this is like the annoying pedantic teacher who, when you were in like third grade, said, can I go to the bathroom? I'm sure you can, right?
That's a question for your doctor.
Right? May may I go to the bathroom, right? I'm sure everyone's smiling because everyone had that teacher. Everyone had that teacher. Yeah, I see. No, you didn't have that teacher, Ellie? Okay, everyone else has, like, the memory of that, of, like, teachers throughout elementary school. I hope it stopped in elementary school, but for all I know, went on to high school.
I don't know if I personally had an experience, but I'm just aware of the phenomenon. There's a problem. One teacher tried to tell me that, like, may is more polite than can.
It's not more polite, but can is a question of capability,
well,
rather than permission.
There is a technical use of can, like it does work, but it's just not, like I thought it was like some long response that like about grammatical rules.
Oh, no, I don't care. But anyway, I really don't care. But so then Ezra says, well, there's another ambiguity here, which is can or may, right? Now, as I've mentioned to you in the past, that is a machloket. In general, in the sugya that I know, I mentioned these last week. This was my smicha b'china, right? Remember I said they try to pick sugya that in Masechta no one does, and I said the one that I got was the two-blot gemara in Temura, Daf Dalet, and on, of Kol Milta Da'amar Rahmana Lo Ta'avidi Avid Mahani Avid Lo Mahani, that whenever the Torah says don't do something, doesn't mean you can't, you're not allowed to, or it doesn't work. Right? So that's actually a general machloket in Kol HaTerakula, but yes, the Ramban invokes that machloket exactly to raise the ambiguity that Ezra picked up on, which is what does our Dwar Psukim mean, which is you may not or you cannot. Right? You are not allowed to, you're not supposed to, or it won't work if you try. Good. Okay, good. That's another question, right? And obviously that might affect the question of whether there's a mitzvah or not. Might not, meaning theoretically, that's part of the machloket there, which is right, when the Gemara says, well, why would you think that things work? The answer is, because otherwise, why is it aser? If it doesn't work, then what did you do? And what's the Gemara's response? You try. Great. This wasn't like, see, you've just foreseen the entire two blot, now you can get into smicha. Right? You know the machloket Rav and Abaye, you've intuited their machloket, right? Which is, on the one hand, it must be that it works, otherwise what do you do? The answer, well, you tried. You shouldn't try to do something else, sir. Aha.
I mean, the Gemara doesn't just recognize, like, power imbalance that, like, I mean, sure, like, the reason why it's worth it is because, like, there are people who have the power to just... Like,
correct. And you could still say it's forbidden, but it would work if you did it, or you could say no. The law makes it that it's an ineffective thing to do.
Right? It's just so strange. Like, because under that idea, like, then the person who, whatever...
Look, it's like you shouldn't sell a pound of flesh, but that doesn't mean it doesn't work.
Right.
Yes, that was a reference. That was a not veiled reference at all to Merchant of Venice.
He demanded that, like, what was his name?
Antonio just cut himself.
What's the worst, why
did
he take him down?
God, okay. Well, we really don't have to get into the detailed machloket about the Merchant of Venice. It has been done. Ezra, it's been done. I mean, Reb Zevin has an article where he did exactly this, where he wrote an entire article on whether halacha would recognize the sale of a pound of flesh.
Yeah.
Yes, it's called Mishpat. It's called Mishpat Shailak, the Orha Halacha.
What?
Mishpat Shailak, the law of Shailak, Shailak, the Orha Halacha, in light of halacha. No, the Orha Halacha. Yeah. Nice pun, but no. The book is called Orha Halacha, and yes, there's Mishpat Shailak. And he gets into a whole view of whether Shylock, whether it worked halachically. What? He doesn't think so. But Rav Israeli responded, why not? Yeah, it became a whole machloket. Okay. It's weird. You would think that this would not be related, but no, these articles get quoted exactly in this type of context in medical ethics. These articles get quoted as part of the discussion of informed consent, and all types of interesting things. Yes. So Ezra raised another question, which is Ellie is convinced that there is a normative portion here. There's a prohibition. But Ellie says, prohibition. What do you mean by prohibition? You mean prohibition like it won't work? Prohibition you shouldn't do it, but it will work, right?
What do you mean it will work? Like, it's not really something that's like
it. No, meaning if like, is it that you shouldn't do this, it's forbidden, but if you choose to write a will or whatever to your other son, the court will respect it. They'll say you are a terrible person and give you a bad eulogy, but...
No, because then that would be...
Well, as I said, that's exactly machloket in... No, so I said that's exactly machloket in Torah in general. Whenever the Torah says don't do something, doesn't mean don't do it and it won't work if you try, or don't, you shouldn't do it, but if you do it, it will work. But... Correct, and there are things that won't, right? For example, like... Good. So there's, if a Kohen marries a Grusha, it works, but he shouldn't do it. But if someone tries to marry their sister, it doesn't, not only is it usher, but it doesn't work. Correct. So sometimes in halacha, the answer, sometimes in mitzvah, the answer is, when you try to do it,
But then there would be a separate process. When, like, can you write until he says that you should
have. No, but that's exactly what the Gemara in Torah does. It goes through each case and says, in this case, we see that it's forbidden and it doesn't work. In this case, it's forbidden, but it does work. And it goes through each case. The Gemara there doesn't bring up the case of Bechor explicitly, and that's why the Ramban deals with that question, right? But this is a broader question in general, is that and yes, the question is which is the default. That's the machlokes Rav and Abaye. Chalitza is one of many examples. Right. Well, in every case, the Gemara says this is a bad example because they all have Zerda Katuv. So it ends up being nothing. Okay. But so far we have Rami who goes with the Rambam who says, aha, this is just a prot. This is just a detail in the laws of Yerusha, and this charge language is to make sure that you don't do what you're not supposed to do. But fundamentally, this is all part of Yerusha. Eli says, no, there's an actual prohibition here. And Ezra says, yeah, but what is that prohibition doing? Is it telling you it won't work? Or is it telling you you shouldn't do it? And that's an open question. Okay, what else might there be since Gavi brought this up in Seder? Right, he missed this in the Ramban. But in addition to that, what else might be going on in this?
In a
positive mitzvah that you should dafka treat the bechor special based on what? Where would you get an idea like that?
I mean, I suppose the
TSM has
Snua Yakir. Very good, because the Torah says thou shall recognize him, which again, how do you read that? Do you read it as emphasis? Do you read it as good? Which Rishon that I gave you took all these Yukim very seriously? The Ramban.
Yeah.
Right? The Ramban, so this is, a wonderful name for a Sefer, but the Ramban, on the Sefer HaMitzvot of the Ramban, wrote what was called the Shichat HaAsin, right? And the Shichat HaLozadin, or technically what he called it, HaShichat Min HaRav Min Mitzvot Lo Ta'asin. What does that mean? That which the Rambam forgot. Meaning, right? The Rambam wrote a Sefer Mitzvot, and this is what you forgot to mention. Okay?
So what did he delete?
Yeah, he doesn't quite explain himself how he gets to 613. Though, to be fair, the Ramban also raises the possibility in his Akdama that there aren't 613 Mitzvot. That 613 Mitzvot is only according to Reb Simlai in the Gemara, and that's just because he counted that. But
correct,
Sim Reb Simlai at the end of Makkah. But the Ramban said that basically that was because of Simlai found the Gematria after counting how many Mitzvot he thought there were. But every time there's a Machloket, the Ramban has two possibilities. Either, yes, there's a Masorah that there's 613 Mitzvot and everyone has to try to work it out based on what they subtract and what they add. Or, no, there isn't. And maybe there are more, maybe there are less than 613 Mitzvot, and it just depends on how you count the Mitzvot and things like that.
Yeah.
Okay. But yes, the Ramban here is working within the position that, I don't know what he's working in the position, but okay, fine. So the Ramban here in Mitzvah Lotase Yudbet, writes as follows. Okay, HaMitzvah Yudbet, the 12th Lotase, Shinimnaenu, that we are prevented, Mihanchilenu Habanim Me'avira Bechora, we are prevented, we are prohibited from holding back the Yerusha of the firstborn from the firstborn. El Yetzer Achiv and giving to the other brothers of Alnan Chilotot Bishnei, rather we must bequeath it to the firstborn. And he said, what's his proof? Like Eli, that there is a prohibition. Lo yuchal vakeret ben aufal pnei ben asnua bachor. Keret bachor ben asnua yakir latet lo bishnayim. Because it says, don't do this. Don't, means prohibition, means usher, means mitzvah, right? Uvigmar yesh nochlen, in the end of our perek, amru lo yuchal vakeret ben aufal matam lo mar lefishnayim arva. Yav yaman chil banav, hatorah nareshut la'avan chil l'chol meshir te, yachal av zekein tam lo mar lo yuchal vakeret. And as we'll see later on in the Gemara, it raises the possibility that you do have some control over Yerusha, but not this. This you can't do. You can't remove the rights of the Bechor. And then he said, "Va'al tachshov shelo yezem minia elishu din midina nachalot." Don't think like Rami or the Rambam that this is not an avera, that this is just a detail in the laws of Yerusha. Don't think like Rami. Rami's like, "Oh no, I'm being attacked by the Rambam."
I mean, it's still wrong, it's theft.
One second, he says, don't understand it as the father can't do it, and therefore the firstborn will get double. So no, it's actually that it's right usher to not give double to the firstborn or to equate the sons so such that the firstborn doesn't get double. Who said that, again, there is a certain flexibility in Yerusha that you're allowed to give to others, you're allowed to play with Yerusha, he agrees that you can't do this. Because you're making a condition against the Torah. And now he says, it doesn't work. The Ramban thinks it's both prohibited and it doesn't work. That's the case. What does it mean it's usher if it doesn't actually work? Answer. Borrow from the Gemara in Tamura because you tried.
Okay,
the call shekinim. And it's definitely, if you lie and said, he's not my firstborn, so that others will inherit, that's obviously a problem. So then you're going to violate prohibition. He said, and the Sifrei says this. Because the Sifrei asked Ezra's question. You might have thought that you shouldn't do it, but if you do it, it works. Tamad Lomar, lo yuchal avaker, ha'im biker, in mevukar. Right? The Sifrei says, no, it doesn't just mean don't do it, it means if you do it, it doesn't work. Yeah, and the Sifrei isn't pretty important, because who wrote the Sifrei? The time, right? The Tanei de Kalachik work, and therefore it's very important. It's the time of the Mishnah.
Well, that's what the Sifrei. Yeah.
Sifrei, yes. It is the Tanaitic Midrash Halacha on Bamidbar and Tvarim. And therefore it's pretty important. So he says, aha! So you see, A, it's a prohibition, and B, it doesn't work. I, how does that usher? Go back to the Gemara and Tamura, which says that it's usher to even try to violate the Torah, because that itself is the prohibition, even if it's not going to work. Yes, Ezra.
So,
try avenues that don't work when the Torah specifically says don't try these avenues.
Yes. So, but if one were to use a loophole per se, and let's say write a star or stuffar or shovel or whatever for each of their non-firstborn sons, which would then equal everything out, would that be usher? Is it usher to try to retain the result or to retain, try to use these usher tactics?
Very good. So that is going to be the very important question that we have to answer, because just like we did with daughters, we have to figure out, yes, is it that the Torah doesn't want this result to be reached, or is that this mechanism doesn't work? Exactly the right question to ask. And in order to figure that out, we got to, right? Meaning we need to, that's the question we should be keeping in mind as we read these sources. Meaning, it's clear that there's some prohibition, but the question is what? Which would you guess right now?
I would guess probably,
yeah, I would tend to agree with you, but why would you say that, right? Why is your intuition that in this case, unlike maybe my daughters, the problem is actually to bring about a certain result? Why would you think that?
Because there's nothing actively against daughters inheriting, but it was just that.
Okay, good, right? So Ezra's saying, look at the language. The language is don't do this, right? Make sure, right? Is that really better? Like, is it really better that, I have a solution. I have two wives. One has my bechor, right? My beloved wife doesn't have my bechor. My hated wife does. I have a solution. I will give him all my property a minute before death just to mess over the wife I don't like and her children, right? Something feels like you missed the point of the psukim, right? It sounds like this is a valued statement, right?
I mean, in such a way that doesn't say that in regards to inheritance.
No, Hanami. Now, there's one more thing, though, that would definitely close the deal on that, which is, if it's not only a lav, but it's an asay. Right? Meaning if it wasn't just a lav and it was an asay, then definitely that would prevent you. Why would that prevent you? Because if it's a lav, you might say, don't do it in this way. But if it's an asay, that means you proactively have to make sure that your firstborn gets double portion. That might be true, right? That might be true in a chanami. You might be able to, but you're... Okay, so let's continue the Ramban. Right, he says, "Ki kishlo amar kadov lo yivaker v'amar lo yuchalav vaker lama shena rashai shena yachol ledaber kin v'chein kolmer shabba b'hen b'tara lo yuchalav." So, and he said, the proof for him is that it uses the word yuchal. Yuchal means can, and therefore the Ramban says, whenever it says can, it means not just that you can't do it, like you may not do it, but you cannot do it. V'israel v'umklos shikin v'chulam lit l'charishu v'chein b'zeh. And he says, each time he says you don't have the authority. U'lasharon lo yaseh kin. But then he adds, "Vanir ad sheyiz b'zeh od mitzvah asay." Not only is there a prohibition, but there is
another
asay. There's an asay, a mitzvah asay, a positive mitzvah. She'amar yitaleh, because God said, "Ki ena b'chor ben asna yakir lo teit lo pidishnayim." The gamzu mitzvah shu chayav lahakiro v'latet lo pidishnayim. There's a positive mitzvah to recognize him, to give him double. V'hine amavir b'choram en agadol. And if you don't, you take it away from the firstborn, over ba'asei v'lo ta'asei, u'shtehen shechachan harav. The Rambam forgot two mitzvot. Va'amnam amar b'din nachalot, she'er b'chor yosh b'yishnayim u'michal din nachalot. It's true that the Rambam says it's a subcategory. V'im yesh lo mitzvot ha'asei miyuchad lo v'enu ken b'shar ha'achim v'vaday nimneu la'atzmo. V'lo ta'chshev she'ze lav abba michal ha'asei b'lvad. He said, it's not just a lav abba michal ha'asei, he said, no, it's full mitzvah and a lot. And he says, it's more than that. You have to proactively declare him your firstborn so that he gets the Yerusha. He said, the only time you don't have to is...
if you only have one son.
No, if everyone knows he's a Bukhar. I mean, you're allowed to be silent if you already know that everyone knows he's a Bukhar. But otherwise, you have to proactively go out of your way to make sure people know he's Bechor. So what does that sound like, for the Ramban at least? Right? Meaning, if he thinks not only is it a mitzvah, but it's a mitzvah to proactively go out and make sure everybody knows your firstborn is, so that after you die, he gets double, right? That sounds like it is value charged. Right? Not just like, oh well, the Torah, right? V'amnam z'kayim mitzvah b'shikat ta'uim no da b'chorah v'nirah sh'abala l'achot nizkar b'zom mitzvah sh'am reprashir of mashlimah mitzvah asay. And he thinks the Bahag agrees with him. Okay? Because the Bahag, when he quotes it, calls it parshat nachalot u'parshmat mishpat b'chorah. He quotes two different laws. The general laws of Yerusha and parshat mishpat b'chorah. Now, how do you defend the Rambam? So the Megillat Esther says, Miguel Esther is one of the commentaries on the Sefer HaMitzvah. What does he say, number five? So he just says, very simple. Well, I don't really need to defend the Rambam. The Ramban already defended the Rambam. He just, meaning this is one of those cases the Ramban actually explained what he thinks the Rambam was thinking. He just disagrees with the analysis, but the Rambam clearly didn't disagree with his own analysis, right? And he just says, no, nearly, Shemashlo Manah, Rahu, Levishas, Abor, Shekol, Ezra, Nimim, Dimim, Dinachalot, Kacher, Katava, Raman, Mishmo. Exactly, the Ramban said, the Ramban thought, that's what the Ramban thought. Which is, he thought it was a subset of Dimim, Dinachalot. He, like Rami, read it that way. V'chein gadoa, Rava, Bismashalo. I gave you the Sefer Charedim in number four, who also weighs in here, and he says, Mitzvat asay sheyitena adam pishnayim livno abachor. It's a positive mitzvah to give double to your firstborn. Shneamar ki ed abachor yakir latet lo pishnayim. Then hevir abacharam mibno abachor over asay. The gam chayav lo diya mi abachor b'tal abachor ladav ruba derabaza minyan tariyak. And he says, now he focuses on only the asay. Right? He very clearly thinks it's an asay, but he only focuses on the asay. Right?
Yeah.
So according to him, or you just say that the negative is a derivative of the positive. I mean, you have to do this, and if you don't, so you did the wrong thing, but maybe it's a lav abba michal asay. Right? The Ramban raises this possibility, that either you look at this as a lav and an asay, but maybe you think, no, it's really an asay, and the lav is what we call lav abba michal asay, which is a prohibition which is derived from the opposite, right? I mean, the fact that you have to do this means you can't not do it. Okay, but basically we have here two different, we have a few concessions. We have the Rambam's concept here, which is also Rami, as Megillat Esther, which is, no. All this charged language is to make sure you do what you're supposed to, but Bechor is just another halacha in Yerusha. And then you have Eli, who was convinced that it's usher to change, less convinced by the fact that it's a positive mitzvah. And the Ramban says, no, you have to do the right thing, and you can't do the wrong thing. And then you have the open question that Ezra said, which is, well, does that mean you can't, or you should, you may not, and you, or you cannot? And he quotes this Sifrei saying, you may not, and you cannot. And then you have the Sefer Haredim, who says, you know what, I think that the focus here is less the love, but more the assay, and the love might be a derivative of the assay, but the main point here is you must actively declare the firstborn the firstborn. Yes?
So what was the love that you can't say that, like, lie?
So the Ramban says either, right, you can't lie, or if no one knows who your firstborn is, you can't hold yourself back from making everything clear. You must proactively declare who your firstborn is.
But that's just an assay. I feel like
correct. The Ramban says, right, so that may be why the Sefer Haredim formulates it the way he does, right? That really this is all an assay. Right? I think there's no way of thinking of it. That really you must make sure the firstborn is recognized as the firstborn. The law is a derivative of that. Yeah, I think that's definitely possible. Right? Now the Ramban himself...
So I don't think it's even a law.
Correct. It might not be a separate law. You're right. It might not be counted as law. Correct. You're right. No. So the general halacha is that a lav haba michal aseh aseihu.
What?
That a lav haba michal aseh, a negative, a prohibition which is derived by implication from a positive, has the halachic status of an aseh.
But, so does he...
So it could be that he actually, the Ramban's havamina, right, the Ramban has a havamina that maybe this is really an assay with a lav haba michal aseh, and he says, no, it's a lav and an assay. But you could have said, no, it's really just an assay and a lav haba michal aseh.
What does that mean to say, what does that mean?
So a lava bami chalasei is just a way of saying that you have a, it's not really a prohibition. It's really doubling down on the fact that you must do what you're supposed to do.
Does he agree that like you call, low you call is
often, I don't,
something has to be referring to like the rules of the system?
I don't know. David Haredim, this is all I have from him. I don't know.
So there's a possibility.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying. It's like if you went against this and you said that your second born was your first born, you would inherit.
He doesn't weigh in on the question of cannot or may not. At least not that I saw. Okay. Fine. The Ramban ala Torah has a radical qualification of this formulation, okay? Do you get to Ramban al Torah?
Yes.
Okay, so what is it?
That if the Bechor is dead, then he doesn't inherit
that what he said?
Or that the father doesn't have to inherit.
No, let's try it again. Let's try it one more time. So first of all, okay, let's read the first part of it. The first half of it is the same as what you would expect from the Sefer HaMitzvot. Good. So what does he say in the first half, Gavi? Lo yuchal levaker ben ahuva. What does he say?
That.
As I reread it. Azhara.
Azhara shalom yasadzeh. Vatim kulam lo tuchal lo chobish aracha. Lo tuchal lo tete racha yishno free. That, right, he cannot.
He may not. We haven't yet gotten to whether that means implies cannot, right? But the first thing is Ramban definitely doubles down on what he says in Sefer HaMitzvot, which is there is a avira here. If you don't give it to the firstborn, you have avira. Okay, good.
Vamar unklus v'chulam leis l'chara reshut. That unklus is, you don't have permission. That ham l'titin yecholet. The reason that is that we don't give you the ability to take it away. The humafliyeg ba'asara, and it's implied by the word.
Right, humafliyeg ba'asara. It's like emphasized. Okay. Okay, good. So the Ramban, as we would expect, based on what he wrote in the Ramban, thinks that there is an additional mitzvah asay and a mitzvah lok asay. Okay? Good. Continue.
V'nei amash v'etabachor l'achav v'nachal atel over v'lok asay v'asay. And similarly, someone who equates the bachor to the other brothers, he's over in a lok asay and in asay. V'afal pishen v'arachayim v'din, even though his words are not actually upheld halachically, v'chol shekein imlo ratzel l'chaziyah shu ha-bachor, and all the more so if he didn't want to tell people that he was, that this child was the bachor, v'tan shu pashut, and just assume that it was obvious.
No. Ta'un shu pashut, and claim that he was a regular son. Pashut l'umat bachor. Right, that he was just a regular son.
Yes.
And
he gave him inheritance like the other children. Midatahu habachor shover ben. Even though he knew that he was before, and he's over on these mitzvot.
Good.
The alien mitzvot also that show. These are the new mitzvot.
Right. Good. So now he adds what he doesn't have in the Sefer HaMitzvot, and that is.
Because the pasuk says al pnei the bechor of the hated wife, Yerali she'en hamitzvah azot v'adin azot noheg el v'chayei habachor. It seems to me that this mitzvah, this rule, is only upheld when the bechor is alive. If the bechor dies when the father is alive, even though he gets part of his inheritance,
meaning he gets double portion, chelik bechorato bekever.
Right, he gets his bechora in the kever and then passes it to his children. Imrata hazakin the Mary Rishu Banai Kafakaf binai Ubanav Shobanai Abakor Yitu Kafakaf bin Hazai. So if the grandfather wanted to say, my children will inherit such and such from me, and the children of the before will inherit such and such from me.
Good.
V'rav kayamin k'rav shem kayamin b'mukam she'em shem before. So his words are upheld the same way they would be upheld for a non-before.
Good.
V'chein inenu over b'lav hazah imlo hikira before l'achar mozo. And thus he is not over the lotus that if he does not give the before double portion after he dies. Kilamatsafi al penei rak b'chayav, because al penei in other places only talks about when the person is alive. Al penei aron avichem, al penei tara v'chein kulam.
Good. Okay, so explain to me what the Ramban said, and then explain to me why he said what he said. So what does he say? What is he saying?
That once the before dies, he, loses the, I kind of loses.
Okay, good. So that's the kind of I want you to pin down. What do you mean, kind of?
This is, I think the status of firstborn is then the lost. And so therefore,
but he says he gets double.
Right. By default, he gets double. But if the father doesn't want him to, then he doesn't.
Very good. So Gavi says, correctly, what the Ramban says is very strange. If the Bechor dies before the father, right, he predeceases the father, So then, the default is that he gets double. But this time, if the father changes his mind and gives it to another son, it A, works, and B, is not usur.
Yeah.
So someone explain that logic to me.
Okay, because it seems from the this is revealing very much in the case of where you have a formal duel. Or it does appear to be talking about it where we have a formal before.
Yeah, but he hasn't before also. He's going to get double. So explain to me what's going on.
But then, so what actually happened? Like, where is the before? Is it in the...
where is the before?
Yeah.
Me, who else? Yaakov?
Rami. I think the default assumption is that the before is, in the Gavra.
Yes, the default assumption is that the Bechor is in the Gavra. That sounds very lumdish, but I'm really not sure what it means, more than a Bechor is a person. I mean, I accept that, Rami.
That once the Bechor dies, then once the Gavra dies, then the Bechor is in the Gavra.
But why did he get double then?
You just want to have someone who gets double.
Someone explain. The Ramban is weird. Explain, because look, let me pose a theoretical position to you, Ezra. Okay? Let's say that someone would say, if the Bechor predeceases the father, then nobody gets double. Then what would you say? Explain that theoretical position that I don't know if anyone ever
predeceases.
Dies before. Predeceased. Just dies before, that's all.
Then no one gets double.
There's no such position. Let's say someone got that position. They had that position though.
What would be the issue?
Explain that conceptually.
Oh, that's easy. Okay.
It's easy.
Because
the
before,
is a position put on the firstborn son, cannot transfer to any other son.
Yeah.
Or to his grandchildren, or whatever. I mean, right? You would come up with something like the before is a right that the firstborn has, and therefore it's not the firstborn is alive, and it's not the children before. Like if the before inherits double, then obviously it passes down to his children. But if he's dead, right? Like while he's alive, so there, it's a status, right? We could come up with a defense for it. But the Ramban is this weird hybrid position, which is on the one hand he says that the default, even if the before dies, is that the before gets double, even by kever, right? Meaning his children will inherit double from their grandparents. Even the grandfather. And yet, it's not usher to change that reality. It happens, but it is not usher to change that reality. Right, meaning the Ramban, right? Meaning the Ramban is a weird position. You could have said, right, again, let's just reiterate it one more time. The Ramban says that if the Bechor dies before the father, then the default remains that he inherits double, even in death, and therefore his children will inherit a double portion from their grandparents. But in this case only, if the father, meaning the grandfather, changes his mind and chooses to treat all his children equally, such that the grandchildren, meaning the children of the Bechor, will only get single, in this case it works and it's not usur.
Well, because it's a father who steps down.
So why?
Is it similar to what we did? I mean, I know we were talking about daughters when we did this, but when we're talking about how the Sadducean don't believe that their youth has, they don't believe in the fact that they raised.
Right. Right, but in this case, we really do believe that he normally gets double. Right, that's the weird thing, is he says the default is you get double. So why?
Step down, it's almost like a tier list, so to speak.
And therefore,
of course, if the son is alive, it would be on a higher status.
You might have ended up with that line of analysis. You might have ended up saying that the Bechor, once he's dead, never gets double. But, right, it's still hard to justify this weird hybrid position, which is he still has a default double, it's just more malleable, more flexible. Right. What is the logic there?
Oh, okay. Because every single one of the other sons has the potential to be a Bechor.
No, it doesn't.
Even if you want to assume that that the next in line son is the definitive before, that doesn't change the fact that every single other son still has that has the quote unquote potential to be a before, because if and then that next son dies, then that's...
But no one's saying go to the second son. The only question is, right, no one's saying that it goes to the second son, right? The only question, he's not saying you make a new before, you get rid of before, right? No one's saying you give it to the second son. They're just saying that you get rid of the notion of before and you treat everyone equally.
I think there's a problem you can see with before.
Right? Oh, okay, good. Now, yeah.
The one being the actual before who's, capable of inheriting the stuff, like the 70 amount, and would obviously be possible to redeem. The other one would be carrying, being the one who carries down the legacy of the father.
Okay.
So when you lose one of the qualities, it's being the actual before instead. You still have the ability to test that legacy.
Okay, so what Ellie already knows, I think, is the direction you have to go, right? You could put variations on it, but Ellie, methodologically thinking, is definitely right, which is to say that it must be that two things are happening at once, of which when someone's alive, both are true, and when they're dead, only one is true, right? Right, that's methodologically definitely what's going on. So, what exists both in life and death?
The Lord.
As what?
A legacy, as all that.
So I would, right? I mean, I might, maybe, maybe let's go back to Rami, okay? Right? At one level, the status of Bechor is really just another halacha in Yerusha.
Yeah.
It's just a law, right? It's a status. Someone is the firstborn, right? And the status of the firstborn is that you get double, and that's part of the Dinei Yerusha, and that's just a halacha, right? And that's true. That's always true, right? But there's something else. So Ellie calls it carrying on the legacy, right? Right, but it could be anything. You could say, no, it's whatever you want to say. That, yes, you have a Bechor who represents, right, who carries on your legacy most, represents you more in this, most in this world. I don't know. Is supposed to be whatever you call it, right? But think about the language. What you're saying makes a lot of sense. Who Reshit? Oh, no. He's the first of your strength, right? There's something about this and the language. What about the language? The Ramban picks up one linguistic cue, which is what leads him to this diuk, which is Al-Panei, right? But what is he really getting at, right? Al-Panei, what? Right, Al-Panei Venazu Habachor, right? There's something about... Why? Because, I don't know, he has a certain relationship in the family, which gives him rights. Right? I don't know, because he's the oldest brother, right? Bechor is among us, right? We all know, right? The firstborn is the...
Responsible one.
Is the responsible one. The firstborn is the one the parents experiment parenting on, and therefore always parent is the worst. We know this, right? This is life. Right? Our firstborns are experiments. Kids, we know that.
Isn't the middle child usually the one parent is the worst?
Yeah, eventually. But the first one is the, and therefore the first one. But the firstborn, right, is certain responsibilities in the family. Right? And so you could say something like, look, the status of the firstborn within Dinei Yerusha, that always exists. But what makes it a mitzvah, what makes it that we like shove that down the father's throat and say you can't change it is, like, this. The firstborn sort of deserves his status, right? He's the firstborn. That means that he has a certain place in the family amongst the brothers, right? You can't take that away from him, whether that just represents you, whether it's because he represents the family, whether it's because he has responsibilities to the family. When he's dead, so the default within Dinei Yerusha, he still gets double. But he's no longer filling that role, and therefore it's not like an affront to everything he does. It's not like, right, being ungrateful or something like that. Something like that, right? There is, you know, another diuk you could have picked up on, and that is not the Al-Panei, but the Levaker. Right? This emphasis, the father has to, like, recognize it. Right? That we want the father to give the Bechor that status in the family. That's only true in life. Right? I mean, what gives him that special mitzvah is that the father throughout life has to recognize his firstborn and all that comes with it. But if the child's dead, right, the dynamics in the family don't demand that. We Dinei Yerusha, right, so it could be there's really Sveidinim. There's the Dinei Yerusha, right, and then there's the Mitzvot Yerusha, right? And in his lifetime, both are true, but in his death, there's still the Dinei Yerusha, but that added Mitzvah because whatever it is that the father owes the son, that doesn't exist anymore. I mean, again, you could put different formulations on it. Yeah, Ezra.
So the default that happens with the son's death, isn't that just that he will inherit double and that will be split amongst
his heirs, correct.
With his Bechor getting double? Or
yes.
Or could you say that the Bechor status will pass on to his firstborn?
It doesn't sound, no, that doesn't happen.
Why?
It's a good question, but it doesn't happen.
Like,
we're going to, well, and we'll see. We're going to, you know, after this, we have to do is figure out the nature of Yerusha Bechor, right? First, we're trying to figure out the mitzvah of it, but there's still the nature, and we'll see how much we do in Bechor. Bechor, you can do it till the end of the year, because there's so many weird things going on in Bechor. Now, I'll quickly, because we're running out of time, I won't read the Ketav HaKabbalah inside, but the Ketav HaKabbalah of Yaakov Mecklenburg is one of those parshanim who really, really tries to understand how halacha emerges from the psukim. So he quotes the Ramban, both the fact that there's a mitzvah aseh and the lot aseh, as well as the Ramban's special halacha that if the son dies, he gets default double, but there's no mitzvah. And he quotes four lines in that the Tor, right? For those of you who don't know, the Tor, Rabbi Yaakov Baal Turim, also wrote a parish on the Torah, and he quotes this as well, even though he doesn't quote it in halacha. Which is Rabbi Yaakov Mecklenburg's point that even though the Torah seems to read the Torah that way, he doesn't paskin that way, and we'll see whether we paskin that way or not. And he quotes, I don't know anyone else who quoted this. So therefore, he's very bothered by this, because if the Ramban is writing the Pesukim, why does no one paskin this way? So here, he just makes a linguistic point, which is that al-Pnei doesn't always mean in the life of, the way the Ramban says. Sometimes al-Pnei sometimes means, like, against your will. And therefore, he quotes, like, in Yeshayahu, amachisim oto al-Pnei, you make me angry to my face. Right? There's simply an idea that it's not as like that you're alive, it's just like you're going against me. Or lo yelecha himachirim al-Pnei, he doesn't necessarily mean in my presence as much as, right, like you're shoving it in my face. But it doesn't necessarily have to be, right, neged mitzoni, and therefore he says maybe that's what it means, that you can't be mevatel bechorah against the will of the bechor. From this he's mechadesh, and this is something we're going to discuss tomorrow, that maybe the proper diok here is not that you can only do this when the bechor is alive, but you can only do, you only can't do it if the bechor wants double. But maybe if the bechor doesn't want double, then in fact you can, and that's what you derive from these pesukim.
I mean, practically speaking, he doesn't want double. Then, like, I mean, like, I just give, like, the money he just got to.
Well, we'll see if that's so simple. We'll see. So we're going to see in the next McCarthy that's not so simple. No, you're right. Once he gets it, he can give it. But the question is, can he alienate himself from it before? There's an asking of that question. That matters.
Taxes?
I mean, in American law, sure, taxes. But yeah, just like in American law, there's an afkamina to that, right? In halacha, there's an afkamina to saying you get it and then you gave it away or you never got it to begin with. Yes, there are an afkamina to that. Okay, so what I gave you a bit of a long piece here from the Ketos. The Ketos is going to take up this Ramban, so here's what we'll do. Tomorrow, try to do the Ketos, where he really tries to go through it and analyze the Ramban. Then what I left you on this sheet is the possibility. Until now, we've been assuming that the mitzvah, if it exists, is on the father. However, we will see that there is a unique shita in the Nitiva HaMishpat, and the Nisivis, that it's not the father's mitzvah, but the brother's mitzvah. So we'll have to pull that one out of the sugya. And then I gave you a short piece here from the Shir Uri Shmuel. We'll do this tomorrow. The day after that, what I want to do is this question that's making Rami angry, which is, what is the nature of Yerusha Bechor that makes it different? And that comes down to a phrase that appears several times in Shas that we need to understand, which is what the Gemara calls mitzvah kari rachman. That unlike other Yerusha, this is defined as a gift. And that might affect the entire nature of Yerusha Bechor, so that's what we do after this, okay? So that's going to take us...
Because the gift you can't like...
So therefore, it might be that other Yerusha are automatic. This might not be automatic, right? And therefore, you might be able to alienate yourself from it before. So that's what we're going to do tomorrow is the Ketos, right? Try to finish this page tomorrow, and then I'll give you the next story sheet after that. Maybe we'll take a break from Yerusha after that and do the Eretz Yisrael also go. We'll see.